Welcome to the Crypto Business Podcast, helping you navigate the frontier of crypto. And now, here is your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Crypto Business Podcast, brought to you by Social Media Examiner. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for innovative thinkers who want to know what works in the world of Web 3.0. Today, I'll be joined by Joel Kamm, and we're going to talk about NFT launch strategy. If you are thinking about launching your own NFT, we're going to talk about some of the core elements you need to be thinking about. By the way, I'm at Stelzner on Instagram. And if you are new to this show, be sure to follow this on your favorite podcast player so you do not miss any of our future content. And now for this week's interview with Joel Kamm.
Helping you to simplify your crypto journey, here is this week's expert guide.
Today, I am very excited to be joined by my good friend, Joel Kamm, who is a futurist and an NFT expert. He's founder of Blockchain Heroes, an NFT project, co-host of the Bad Crypto Podcast, and host of the Nifty Show, and also closing keynote at Social Media Marketing World, which just happened literally exactly a week ago from when we're recording today. Joel, welcome back to the show. How are you today, man?
I am great, and thanks for having me. And man, was World a good time.
It was amazing. So what we're going to talk about today is NFT launch strategy. And there's a lot of people that haven't got the experience that you have, Joel, and I'm very excited to go down this rabbit trail with you. But before we do, let's get a little bit of your backstory when it comes to NFTs. Help everybody understand kind of the history on your side with launching NFTs and bring us up to the present.
Yeah, I first discovered NFTs in December of 2017 when a little product called CryptoKitties launched. And I was hosting Bad Crypto with my friend Travis Wright, and we discovered that you could mint these cartoon cats, and each one of them was unique with their own unique attributes, and you could breed them. Basically, your kitties could have babies and you'd make new ones from them. We thought it was hilarious. And we did a show dedicated to CryptoKitties in 2017. I think we may have been the first podcast to cover it. I opened my first OpenSea account in January of 2018, and we minted our first NFTs to commemorate those who met us at a Bitcoin conference in Miami in January of 2020. Since then, we've discovered other blockchains that we've experimented with to mint NFTs, have created multiple original IPs of our own, and have minted over 1.5 million NFTs. So, and right now I'm an advisor for a number of different NFT, play to earn, and metaverse projects that also revolve around NFTs, and just am immersed in the space. I play with colored pixels all day. It's great.
Tell everybody about the Blockchain Hero project and kind of what that is so they can wrap their head around that, because there was a strategy behind that. And then let's also, when you're done with that, talk about the latest exciting project you're involved with.
Yeah, Blockchain Heroes was a digital trading card set that was inspired by real world cryptocurrency and blockchain personalities. And what we did is we picked 50 people that we felt were real heroes in the space. And then we created this alternate universe of superheroes that they inspired. We packaged them up just like baseball cards, where you would put cards in the pack, and we made a number of different rarities, everything from common up to one of one variations. And of course, the rarer they get, the more animated and interesting they become. And then we sold 12,000 packs of cards, sold out in 20 minutes. Since then, we've made multiple sets. We've got something like 160 heroes and villains in our universe now, and we're working on a game so that people can play with their heroes.
What year did you launch that project, and over how many years did you sell that project?
So we launched it in summer of 2020. We were really one of the first to offer a set like that on Wax Blockchain's Atomic Assets Standard, which is technical stuff that you don't need to understand. And we sold two sets in 2020 and a set in 2021 and one in 2022. And now we're working on games. And that's just one of the IPs. We created the world's first subscription box with NFTs in late 2020 called the Nifty Box. And people would buy a membership card, and then for 15 months, several times throughout the month, they would get an airdrop of an NFT to their wallet. Could be a pack of cards from another property, could be an exclusive NFT from a property, could be a one of one. And people who bought that got a lot of value, and they were actually asking if I was going to do it again for 2022. And it was so much work to pull together this great content. I said no. And now there's other subscription boxes out there. But you know, we've tried to pioneer a lot of different routes for letting people to derive utility and value from their NFTs.
Tell everybody a little bit about what you're doing with the Nifty Show, just so they can understand it, because I think it might be fascinating for some people that are thinking of starting their own projects.
Sure. Right around the time that we started thinking about doing the Blockchain Heroes card set, Travis and I were talking about NFTs a lot. And we thought, well, why don't we just go ahead and do an ancillary podcast called The Nifty Show? And I think we were the world's first NFT podcast, not the first NFT YouTube channel, but the first audio podcast. And since that time, we've talked to hundreds of different projects on the site, on this particular show. We do two episodes a week. And now my son, Zach, is one of the co-hosts as well. So we kind of swap out who's hosting the various episodes, and they're short episodes. They're, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes. We get in, talk about projects or technology in the space or creators that are doing cool things, and we're out. So it's a quick listen, and it's also a video show as well as audio. So some people watch, some people listen.
Do you find that most of the people on that show are on the investor side of things, or do you also find people are actually watching what you're talking about on that show, trying to look for inspirational ideas to start their NFT projects?
I think it's all the above. I think there's investors. I think there's creators. I think there's technologists. There's futurists. They're all kind of getting into the space and figuring it out. Well, you know, where do I fit in to the space? And so we hear from all kinds of different people. And this is still very early, Mike. We're still in the early adoption phase of NFTs and will be for the next few years.
You're involved with a high-profile celebrity on a special project that you are, I believe, able to talk about. So you want to just give a little skinny on that?
I am able to talk about it. I've got a business partner who's very connected to a lot of different high-profile celebrities. And last December, I had the opportunity to fly to Florida and go to the house of one Sylvester Stallone. Spent a couple hours with him, and we talked about creating an NFT generative project with him that would deliver value to his fans, not just a profile picture project, but one that would have real world utility and experiences. And so now people can go to planetsly.com and they can learn how they can mint a Sly Guy that will be releasing these in April. They're a lot of fun. They're inspired by Sly's characters that he's portrayed in different films and by his life. And it's going to be a complete generative set. No two are going to be the same. And the Discord is already growing pretty quickly. So people can jump on in there and have a chance to maybe go to a dinner that Sly is going to be hosting and hear him speak.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. So there are people listening right now, like you mentioned, creators, entrepreneurs, marketers who are skeptical on NFTs. And from a marketing perspective, what does this make possible that maybe previously wasn't possible? Or for the skeptic out there that doesn't understand why this could be so beneficial to a business, what do you want to say to them?
Well, this is part of Web 3. And you know, this is part of the keynote that I delivered at Social Media Marketing World, was sharing the difference between Web 1, which was where we would read what was on the web, Web 2, which we're all immersed in right now, where we can not only read, but we can also write. We become the content creators. But other people are monetizing our content, whether it's Facebook, Google, or any of the other large tech sites. Web 3 is a world where we own the content that we're creating. And NFTs are just one avenue of facilitating ownership in this new Web 3 world. As for marketers and business people, we're going to get to pave the way. We are the trailblazers to decide how does owning a particular NFT bring utility to the holder. I like to think of them as the ultimate loyalty program, and they could be lifetime programs. And once somebody has one of your NFTs, as a creator, as a brand, you can choose to continue adding value to the people that hold those NFTs for as long as you want. And you can earn revenue every time somebody transacts in one.
Well, and I also think that there is this concept of owning something turns the customer into an evangelist, because there is an economical side to a lot of these NFTs. You've got people that are wanting to hold some limited edition NFTs because they look at it as a investment, and they believe in the people behind the project, and they believe in the company behind the project. And as a result, they're willing to pay more, for example, right, to hold these, but they're also willing to let the world know that they have it. You know, you see people changing their profile pictures. You see people posting on social media, like sometimes I do. When I just recently bought into a project called Muri by Haas, which I'm very bullish on, and I'm sharing that, and that's helping the project because I'm evangelizing that, right? And that is kind of a marketing advantage, isn't it? Because it seems like, just like with your blockchain heroes, you probably had people, Joel, that loved their blockchain heroes and totally evangelized all about it, right?
Totally. And you could see it right here on my Twitter. You could tell the difference between an NFT profile picture and a regular one. Regular ones are just a circle. NFT pictures that are connected to your wallet use this hexagon format. And just a week or so ago, we actually interviewed the people from Greedy Gramps, that these are generative pieces of art that are a membership to various discounts and things that, let's say, our gray hair, you know, generation would be more interested in. And I put it up as my profile picture. I like this guy. He's on the beach. And that's like advertising for that particular set. I change it probably once a week to a new NFT that I've picked up. And it's a lot of fun. Now, when people are putting up and collecting NFTs, they're identifying as part of a group. So for marketers, when you could identify a certain group that's holding NFTs from a collection, now you've got a target. You know exactly what wallets they have. And if you wanted to airdrop them something that would be valuable, you can do that. It's a better way of getting attention than email, which of course we know is not nearly as deliverable as it could be, or social, where it's hard to get attention unless you're paying the powers that be to say, show my ads and my profile.
All right. Well, you've been involved with a lot of NFT projects. So let's take these one at a time. What are kind of, in your opinion, the critical elements of a successful NFT launch? Where do we start?
Well, you know, as a consumer, okay, I'm going to start there because this is more important, I think, to the consumer than the creator. If the creator is not making great art, then the consumer is not going to be interested in it. But as a buyer, I want to make sure that I like the art to begin with. A lot of projects will create a bunch of hype and say, hey, buy this because it's going to go to the moon and it's going to do this, that, and the other. But if you look at it and go, you know, I want to own that in my wallet, whether or not they succeed in accomplishing their goals, that's the place I want to start. And is it appealing to the target market that the creator is making it for?
Yeah. And it's fascinating because for those that aren't watching the video, the Sly Guy stuff looks a little bit like Mortal Kombat. Was that by design? You know, those Mortal Kombat characters?
He's an action hero.
Yeah.
And so it's designed to be action-y. It's inspired by him in the vast majority of his films, with the exception of a couple comedies. He's an action hero, you know, guns a-blazing. That's really what it's inspired by.
Okay, so we start with the art, and I'm imagining, on the last podcast, we also talked about the art a little bit. Do you feel like the days of having this ugly art is kind of gone? I mean, because, you know, we've got some really ugly art that's gone to the moon that's incredibly popular, but it feels like the quality of the art is starting to get three-dimensional. It's starting to get more attractive. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think people are interested in the art, but, you know, there's a reason a game like Minecraft has become super popular. In an era where we've got VR and we've got video games that have these high polygon counts, even photorealistic, Minecraft is pixels. And yet it's played by hundreds of millions of people around the world because of its simplicity. So I think there's something to be said for the simplicity of pixel art. As to whether or not the art is good, that really is in the eye of the beholder, right? There's some, you know, you showed me some art the other night, and I was like, okay, that's all right. It was kind of like a manga, you know, a Japanese anime, and that's not really my thing, but I understand how somebody who likes that would find that really appealing.
Also, I would imagine when you're about to release a NFT project, you should reveal at least what the art's going to look like in advance, right? That's really important because a lot of these projects don't reveal the art. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it's really hard to get people involved if you don't show them what they're going to be purchasing. If it's a complete mystery, then you don't know what you're buying. I think that puts people off. So I'm not aware of any significant projects that aren't revealing, because that's part of the, launching any project is you want to tease people, show them.
Well, but that Nike project, what about that Nike project with that weird looking box? They're not really showing you anything other than a box, right?
That's true, but we didn't buy those. That was a free airdrop if you held one of the artifact NFTs that we did know what they were going to look like.
Ah, so this is where the history of the project is really important too, I would imagine, right?
It is. It is. And we can use that as an example when we get into that portion of the qualities.
So let's talk about, once we have art, what's next?
So after that, the most important thing to me to look for is utility. What does owning this NFT unlock? If NFTs are magical boxes and owning one means that you can get whatever the creator puts in that box, what do you get? Do you earn cryptocurrency for having these NFTs, for staking them, for playing them in a game? Can you use them in a metaverse?
Can you explain staking to people that don't understand that? Because a lot of people don't understand that.
Sure. Basically, staking is saying I'm going to lock these up in a lockbox, and while they're there, they're going to earn me crypto. It's kind of committing to the project in a way that says, I'm in, you're going to hold on to this for me, and as you do, I'm going to earn either more cryptocurrency or I'm going to earn other NFTs.
Got it. Okay, so you were saying staking, and what else were you saying is part of?
It could lead to more digital goods. For example, owning the Nifty Box membership we had meant you were going to get airdrops, free NFTs sent to your wallet on a regular basis. This is what we're talking about with what Artifact did, who was purchased by Nike. They sold these Clone X avatars, which are these amazing 3D looking things. And then they got acquired by Nike, and we found out, oh, surprise, you've got more goodies. And they dropped this cool looking box that we still don't know what's inside. I hope it's sneakers. I hope they're sentient sneakers. That's what we're speculating, because now Nike is getting into the space, and there's a reason they bought this company that wanted to make, you know, digital sneakers. And we don't know what's in this box, but we know because of the brands that are involved, that's probably going to bring massive value. And right now, if you wanted to pick an unopened mystery box up off the secondary market, I think it costs about $18,000.
Yeah, it's 6.8 is when I looked at it this morning, Ethereum.
That is amazing. So it could lead to all kinds of things. Maybe you can use the character from your NFT in a metaverse, right? They're going to be creating all kinds of different verses, different worlds that people can use these characters in for different utilities, for meetings, for playing games. It could be a subscription. It could unlock physical goods, which is what we've seen with Gary V's gift goats from VFriends. I own one of these and I bought it under the promise that Gary was going to send us 18 physical gifts over 3 years. Well, guess what? That's turned into 18 physical gifts and 18 NFTs. Each gift comes with an NFT. And so far we're 3 gifts in, and he's killing it with this. The value of these has skyrocketed because Gary just keeps delivering value.
I think you privately told me that the era of just art in an NFT is kind of done, right? I mean,
I don't know that it's done, right?
I mean, here's the good news. We're very early. Like, I think there's only 60 million MetaMask wallets, and I bet you there's not that many people that own NFTs. So we're very early, but I think people are starting to get a little bit more careful about what they invest in, because they want to know that there is something here beyond just a profile picture, right? Or no?
Well, yes, but not all NFTs are just profile pictures. There's a lot of actual art that is being sold that isn't designed as a generative set, that maybe there's 30, you know, issues of a particular piece, just like you would walk into a physical art gallery and buy a piece off the wall, and it could be signed and numbered one of 250 by this particular artist. If you go to niftygateway.com or Super Rare or OpenSea or any of these sites, you'll find artists that are selling original works that you can own in its digital format. Sometimes they'll also send you the physical one if you purchase it. And we're starting to see, even amongst artists, the ability to tap into the community of owners. For example, I bought one piece of art off Nifty Gateway that was this little guy that looked like the mushroom from Super Mario. But when you could take his head off and it spins around, you see two big eyes there, and the eyes were actually his nose. It's really funny. Well, for those who are seeing the video, if you look over my shoulder, you'll see a box that looks really weird. And inside that box is a physical representation of the NFT that I purchased. There's only 75 of them in the world, and I own one of them right there. So artists are going beyond just creating art to say, how else can we add value? Just the other night, I bought an NFT on Nifty Gateway that I had the right to purchase because I owned another piece of that same artist's work. So just art is not always just art. And there's the era of art is definitely not over and won't be. However, for profile pictures, I do believe you have to build community. You have to have a DAO. You have to have utility that goes beyond that profile picture.
Well, and we're also seeing events are starting to come out with, like, you and I believe are both going to Permissionless in Florida in Palm Beach, and they just launched essentially for 1.1 ETH, you get a VIP ticket, but that gets you into all future Permissionless conferences, right? Our friend Joe Polizzi did something very similar for 0.75 ETH, which I got one of those tickets, which is what he calls the never ending ticket. So the utility could be access, right? And I think that's kind of fascinating as well.
Absolutely. Gary's V-Friend set, 10,200 and some out of them. Everybody who purchased any one of them gets 3 years access to VCon. And the first event is coming up in May in Minneapolis. And there's going to be well over 10,000 people that are there for this event. And for me, it's a must not miss.
Unless you're like me and you didn't get one. So let's talk roadmaps.
You can buy a ticket on the secondary market.
Okay, well, that's news. So, and again, that's another utility, right? So in this case, Gary, if you own a VFriend, I'm assuming he's issuing a ticket that is an NFT to the event. Is that right? And then you can sell that?
Yeah, correct. In fact, what's interesting is they just dropped to everybody that was holding a VFriend just yesterday. And these are the token art has not yet been revealed yet of what they're actually going to look like. But Pete, you can buy a ticket now for about $5,000 for the 3 day event on the secondary market.
That's madness, dude. That is crazy expensive. That's just ridiculous, you know?
We don't know what the artwork's going to be, though. You're not just buying a ticket to this event. You're going to get this NFT. And for all we know, Gary is going to make these generative. Maybe he'll have a famous artist who's doing these. You just know that anybody who wants to bring value in the NFT space, you go big. You think of how can I bring the greatest value to my members so that this ticket isn't just a ticket, but it's a collectible in and of itself. You know, you don't have to, in the old days of going to an event, you'd bring a ticket with you, they would take that ticket and it would be gone, or they would tear it in half so it couldn't be used again. They're not going to take this ticket. They're going to boop, check it. You've got it. You're in, and you still have a collectible. And so what looks like a crazy price right now might end up being a great investment. We don't know.
Let's talk about your third thing, which is roadmaps, and help everybody understand what's the difference between utility and roadmaps, because they kind of feel like they're similar.
Well, the roadmap explains how the utility will be rolled out. You want to set people's expectations. You know, when are you doing reveals? When are you doing your mint date where people can purchase these? When will people then be able to use them for the utilities? And so setting up roadmaps allows you to check off these things that you're doing along the way. For example, with Sly Guys, we're going to set a date for mint, and then we're going to say, there's a dinner going on, and for everybody who collects three of these on the day we take a snapshot of the blockchain, you're going to get to go to a dinner where Sly is going to be speaking. And some people are going to get a VIP experience where they get to meet him, shake his hand, get an autograph, get a picture, right? So those will be on the roadmap. And then there's going to be other activities that we're going to do, other thing that people can redeem. And we put those on there with a date. So people have an understanding of what's coming.
What have you seen? What tips do you have for people that are putting roadmaps together? Does it need to be completely mapped out for years? Or like, what advice do you have for people that are thinking about roadmaps? Because I'm with you. I think roadmaps are essential, like in order for you to get people to want to keep the NFT, right? Because the more people that keep the NFT, that means there's less NFTs available on the secondary market, which stimulates the price to go up, I would imagine, right?
Right. Yeah. So I've done projects that had no roadmap that I just sold as collectibles. Right. And people bought them, they collected them, they traded them, they hodled some, and there's nothing else to those. They were purely sold as collectibles. But that was a year and a half ago. And now that doesn't cut it anymore. You have to say, all right, you're going to buy these, then you're going to be able to unpack them, and you're going to be able to use them on the secondary market. And in 6 months, we're going to have a beta of the game for you to play. Right. And then you're going to be able to earn cryptocurrency at 12 months. I think it's really important to lay out that roadmap for people. Again, I'll use Gary as an example. He, in his mind, has a 40-year roadmap for the VFriend series. Now, I don't know what that looks like. He's only told us 3 years, which is that, And the trust that he's going to deliver makes us believe, okay, he's going to do this for the rest of his life and he's going to add value to this collection. So I think a roadmap is super important. Let people know what you're going to do. You don't have to give exact dates. You don't even have to give precise months. Say, you know, third quarter, we're going to do this. Fourth quarter, we're going to have this for you.
With The Walking Dead, which I own three of these NFTs, what they originally said was that they were going to not release another series until after a year. And they also did say they're going to do 5 airdrops to everyone who holds the NFTs. And I got the first airdrop, which is this rotating crate, which is really cool looking. But then after the successful launch, what they ended up doing was they, in their Discord, said, we are never going to launch another one of these series. And as a result, this is the initial 5,000 and that's all there is to it. And that's kind of exciting.
Right. Because you know, you've got something super rare. We talked about Nike and Artifact. Earlier, I referenced these CloneX series, which are just really cool 3D art. And everybody who got one of these got airdrops of a space pod, which is going to be used in your metaverse space. And then they dropped out of the blue these boxes right here. And this, if you look at the animation on this, Mike, this is the first NFT we've seen that has a Nike symbol on it. And it's loading up right here. We don't know exactly what's inside, but you can see the box is getting ready to explode. And it didn't in the beginning. In the beginning, it was just a box that rotated. And the community is solving puzzles. And once a threshold of solving those puzzles was reached by the Artifact team, the box evolved. And it started to open a little and started to glow blue. And there were sound effects. And now it's at the third level. And it's getting ready to bust open. And I think that they're going to make a lot of news when this happens because they're really breaking new ground in the NFT space.
Okay. So far we've talked about art. We've talked about utility. We've talked about roadmaps. What's next?
Community. Community is so important. You have to build community. It's that whole 1,000 raving fans philosophy. You have to bring people in and target their interests. And make them feel like they're a part of something because they really are. When you take ownership of an NFT in a collection, you are in a community of people that is usually limited. You know, in the case of Gary, it was 10,200 and some odd of these VFriends. You know, in the case of the CloneX from Artifact, there's 20,000 of those that'll ever be made. They're minted, they're done. And you know, there's some people out there that own 5 or 10 of them. So in fact, if we look at OpenSea, you can see exactly how many unique owners there are. Out of 19,100 items, there's about 8,700 people that own them.
That means about your average person owns 2 or 3 of them, it looks like.
Yeah, of those that own them, right. So it's a small community when you think about what NFT communities are going to be in the future. When you think about the number of people that collect baseball cards or Garbage Pail Kids or Funko Pop toys, there's millions of people. And as NFTs move from early adoption to mainstream adoption, you're going to see millions of people collecting NFTs, which makes me think that some of these early collections are truly OG. You know, when Mark Cuban's company, Nifty's.com, released Matrix NFTs, they sold 100,000 of them at $50 each, and they sold out. And because, you know, the Matrix is this mainstream property, people were allowed to buy 10 at a time. I don't know how many unique buyers there are, but that kind of gives you an idea of the beginning of how this can spread.
Let's talk about your thoughts on community, because obviously you don't just stick them up on OpenSea and a community magically forms, right? There's some work that has to be done in advance. So what are your thoughts on tips?
Well, you need to build on social. You know, you need to leverage Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube, whatever's going to target your audience. And in the NFT community, it seems like Telegram and Discord are the two social platforms that are most used to communicate with those communities. We started on Telegram. We've moved to Discord because I think there's a lot more tools and empowering things you could do for your community on Discord. In all of the NFT projects I'm in, the majority of them are now on Discord. You could assign roles to people. You can reward those who are engaged with the community. You can have moderators and administrators, and you can have game channels. And they're a lot of fun. And so you want with your project to have a common vision It could be a mission. It could be a cause. There's a lot of projects that are in it just to raise money for a good cause. There's a project that I've had the opportunity to work on with my friend Travis Wright, who's leading ancientwisdom.io. And this is going to be a project that 50% of the proceeds goes into a helping DAO. It was created because our dear friend Oz Sultan has been battling stage 3 cancer, and it wiped out, you know, all of his savings. And we thought, what if there was a way to purchase NFTs that the proceeds would go into a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization, where the members, those who hold the NFT, would vote on how to use the proceeds. So this way, people who are also suffering from some medical need and need some money could be able to go to the DAO and apply and say, I've got this going on, I need $10,000. And the community could evaluate that and look at that. And as a community, vote. Is this person going to receive a portion of these percentages? So having a mission, having a cause, identifying your niche, and being very clear to communicate that is going to bond your community together.
For those that are regular listeners, Travis was on the podcast, and it was formerly called Soul Shamans, which is what it was he was calling it. So now he's changed the name to Ancient Wisdom. So it is the same project that we were talking about. Do you find that there should be a certain amount of people in the community before you do the launch? Have you found that like an active Discord group or a creators that happen to have really loyal audiences seem to find more success with these kinds of projects, assuming that that audience is familiar with NFTs?
Well, they do. It's just really like any other kind of product. You have to build an audience that's interested. You have to create a pressure cooker that people are eager to spend their hard-earned money on whatever it is you're offering prior to your sale. So, you know, if you can go open up a Walmart, you know, that sells the goose that lay the golden eggs in the middle of the Sahara Desert, and only a camel's going to walk by. But if they were to market it, all of a sudden the Sahara would have a lot of traffic, you know, coming through because there's gold in that desert. So it's the same best practices that marketers are used to applying for whatever goods or services they're selling that you're going to want to apply to NFTs. Build your community ahead of time. Bring the interest in, get people excited to spend their money, and then boom, you pop the cork on it and people rush in ideally to get it. But I've seen a lot of projects fail because we're kind of at this point now where NFTs, Mike, now that we've passed the beginning of early adoption and the media hype has died down, that a lot of creators just see money. I'm not saying all, but a lot do. And what happens when people see money is they rush in to create, but the demand, the consumer side, has not grown at the same rate. So you have a lot more projects coming out now than there is demand for, which inherently means you're going to have too much of a supply. And just like any new business, 80% of them fail in the first 2 years. A lot of NFT projects are going to get the same fate.
Just last week, you and I were both surrounded by thousands of people at Social Media Marketing World, so many of which had no freaking idea what the heck an NFT was, right? And we had endless conversations with them. And maybe this is a perfect transition into the next phase, right? Which is, you can't just get the community magically to show up if they don't understand what the heck it is, right? So what is the next phase in the launch process?
Well, it's marketing. It's all the best practices that people have learned in whatever business that they're working, right? And it's how to create your messaging, your branding, your website, your social platforms, how to engage with people, how to do ad spends, you know, how to do your email list. It's how to give out free samples. It's all of the things you already know as a business person and your marketer. It's just learning how to apply them to this particular niche. But the psychology of sales doesn't change at all.
However, when we're talking about launching an NFT project to a community that has no idea what an NFT is, this is a educational process that goes beyond marketing. And you and I both have talked about the level at which Gary Vee had to go to be able to pull this kind of stuff off. And, you know, it's one thing when you are actively in the NFT community like you are. It's another thing when you're going, for example, with this Sly project, you're dealing with people that are much older that are Sly fans that have no idea how to use an NFT. I would imagine this is going to require a massive educational process, right?
It will, especially early on. You have to train people. You know, in the beginning, we had to train people how to plug in their computer and how to use their CD drive, and that it wasn't a drink coaster, right? I mean, I don't know how many people thought that was a cup holder when they popped out that CD drive. You have to teach people how to use new technology. The first time somebody picked up a smartphone, some people got it intuitively and others got lost and were overwhelmed by it. So there's always a learning curve. And right now where we are with cryptocurrency, blockchain, and NFTs, there's a learning curve to setting up a cryptocurrency wallet, to getting crypto into your wallet, to connecting it to the site, to learning the terminology. And so you do need to onboard people gently and slowly. And that's one of the reasons the Discord communities exist, is to provide simple tutorials, to provide support and guidance. There is a day coming in the not too distant future where you won't have to explain. Just like, you know, having a credit card with a chip or a stripe on it. I don't know how that works. I just know when I put it into the little machine, Visa and American Express bill me once a month. It's a miracle. It just works. That's what's going to happen with blockchain and NFTs. We're going to arrive at that place where the technology is plug and play and people won't even be talking about blockchain. They'll just be doing the thing and it'll come very naturally to them. But we're not there yet. So for now, we do need to teach and train.
Thank you for that. And I think it's really important that people really wrap their head around the fact that a big chunk of their audience, especially if they have a very large audience in traditional marketing, like large email list, large social following, large base of existing real world customers, my guess is that maybe 10% of them are even going to understand what the heck an NFT is, right? I mean, like, it's very, very small right now.
Yeah.
So beyond the education, like, let's talk about from your perspective as a marketer, Joel, like, what are some tips and feedback for our listeners, specifically when it comes to marketing an NFT project? Like, maybe just speak from your own experience or from some of the things that you've seen from a lot of the people you've been getting on your Nifty show.
You know, I would encourage people to learn a lot before they create their own NFT project. You really have to go down the rabbit hole. And it reminds me playing in the space of when I was using DOS as an operating system, you know, before we had Windows. You have to get in there and tinker and learn and ask questions and search for the answers. Fortunately, now we're further along down that path where there are tools that can facilitate minting NFTs. But before you jump in on either creating NFTs, which you're then going to market, or buying, I recommend that you learn, educate yourself. There's a lot of great videos. There's a lot of great podcasts out there. There's plenty of articles. Ask the questions that you need answers to. And in many cases, it starts with, what's an NFT? What's a blockchain? How do I get Ethereum? How do I set up a MetaMask wallet? All of these are easily answered with the content that's online. So I really recommend educating yourself and understanding exactly what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it before you take any of those steps. People on the consumer side who have jumped in to purchase NFTs without fully educating themselves, especially on the security side of things, some of them have ended up very unhappy because there's a lot of scams out there because there's money. Anytime there's money involved and there's people that have predatory practices, they're going to go for the most vulnerable. Who's that? People who are new. So be wary, especially if you're new. There's a lot of great projects out there and there's a lot of quality and a lot of reputable companies, but you have to know what you're getting into so that you don't fall prey to one of the scams.
You mentioned that there's tools for NFTs. Is there any couple that you can think of off the top of your head that our audience might want to look into?
You know, one of the easiest ways to mint NFTs is on my favorite blockchain, which is Wax. Anybody can go into the Wax blockchain and create a Wax Cloud wallet in 30 seconds, and it's free. You go to wallet.wax.io. Now you've got a wallet. And by using the tools at sites like AtomicHub.io, which is one of the primary sites that the Wax Marketplace exists, anybody can mint a collection of NFTs. The tutorials are simple. It's easy to do. And there's a lot of click, you know, point and click now to it. Upload your image, put in a title, a description. How many do you want to make? Go. And this is getting easier. We didn't always have this. It's been more complicated and you needed to hire a technology team or know how to do it yourself before. But these tools are becoming more prevalent and easier to use.
What about on Ethereum, which is kind of the big one? Is there any tools that you would recommend?
Yeah, well, you can go to OpenSea, you can go to Rarible, you can go to Mintable.com. And on all of them, these tools exist where you can upload an image and create your NFT and then say, here's what I want to sell it for. Like we said before, just creating an NFT and putting it out there, the odds of it selling, unless you're a big name or unless you've done marketing beforehand, are very small. But you never know, you might create something that somebody sees and goes, I have to have that. And all of a sudden you've made your first sale.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the marketing that's going into the Sly Guys project, just so people have a sense, because this is a big project and we have a lot of marketers listening.
Well, right now we're building the Discord for this. The first article was broken on deadline.com, which is a big Hollywood site. So the news of that is getting picked up. We've got all the socials set up on Instagram. Stallone put a video up just a few days ago announcing it to his community. And so right now, it's a matter of growing the community. I know that there's some articles that are coming out soon, and we're going to do some giveaways and contests. We're asking people to audition to get whitelisted. One of the problems with new projects is people that are just there to buy it and flip it. They have no interest in the community. They're only in it for a profit, will get whitelisted for a project. That means that they're on the list to purchase in either a pre-sale or on sale day. Well, what happens when you have people who aren't interested, they buy it and then they flip it. It's not good for the community, and people who really want them often miss out. So rather than having a whitelist, we're doing a Sly list. We're asking people to make a video of up to 60 seconds sharing Sly love. Why do you love Sylvester Stallone? What movie is your favorite? Do you want to do an impression of something? Yo, Adrian, what is it that you know, you want to share with Sly, because he's going to see them all. He's going to look at them. And we want the people who are really passionate about Rambo or Rocky or Judge Dredd, you know, any of these films that he's been in, or just how inspiring his life is. We're talking 5 decades of success in Hollywood. This man has inspired millions and millions of people around the world. And this is an opportunity to engage with him. So I think that it's really important to create that kind of engagement and make sure that the audience that is having the opportunity to purchase really cares about the project they're investing in.
I think the whitelist is kind of important, right? Because it's going to give people an opportunity to get in before the rest of the world gets in, right? Any thoughts on creative things? I mean, like, I hear a lot of people talking about Dutch auctions and stuff, and maybe this is the last part of the equation that we should talk about, which is the financial side of it. What's your thoughts on all that?
Well, you know, NFTs can mint for any dollar amount that the creator wants to sell them. You can give them away for free. You could sell them for a buck. You could sell them for 10, 100, 1,000. You know, Gary's Gift Goat that purchased when they launched was $20,000 in Ethereum at that time, which sounds like a lot of money, but they're worth about $180,000 right now in the secondary market. So whoever got those, it was a good investment. The creator has to decide what is the right asking price to bring these to market. You have to decide, are you targeting just whales, people with a lot of money, or are you looking to create an entry point that anybody can get in? With the Matrix NFT avatars, they were $50 each. Anybody who wanted one could get one. Right. You know, we haven't yet set a price on the Stallones, but we know they're going to be high in demand. So they might be a little more than the typical price for an NFT. Johnny Depp issued something like 3,000 or so generative pieces of art a few weeks ago. Neverfeartruth.com was the site. And I think they sold for about $2,000 to mint one of them. So it really depends upon your audience, what you think the value of it is that you're presenting to them. And again, people who are looking at NFTs as investments, you have to do even more research than the average purchase would be, because a lot of them are not going to hold their value over time. And so make sure you understand what it is that you're purchasing and what utility is going to come with it.
Explain what a Dutch auction is, just for people that don't understand what that is, because it seems to be pretty popular these days.
Sure. There's a number of different ways to sell NFTs. One way is just an absolute price. And sometimes people will set it so that those who get in the pre-sale get them a little bit cheaper than those in the public sale. But a Dutch auction is where the price is set at its highest price. So let's say there's 1,000 of NFTA, and the price for those is $1,000. You can go and buy it when the clock starts ticking, but every certain time period, could be 10 minutes, could be an hour, could be 6 hours, the price drops. I've seen auctions like this where some of them they've priced up at 15 Ethereum, and it wasn't until they got down to 2 or 3 Ethereum that the market said, that's the right price. And they started buying them, and then they sold quickly. So it's an interesting way for price discovery to take place, because if you know you want one and you have the money, you can buy one right off the top. But if they're moving slowly and the price keeps dropping, you might want to wait for the right entry point before you make your purchase.
Well, and I think the psychology behind it is kind of fascinating, because if you believe the project is going to sell out and you believe there's a lot of demand, then the Dutch auction makes a lot of sense. It's like, do you pay now and get in, or do you wait and possibly not get in and have to buy them in the secondary market, right? Isn't that kind of what's at play there a little bit?
It is. And I think the majority of people are kind of wait and see. All right, we can see the numbers as they're being minted. Are they going quickly? Oh, crap, I better get in there and get mine. Are they going slowly? Okay, everybody's kind of measuring this out to wait and do price discovery and see, okay, what do the masses think this is worth? And so I think it's wise, you know, just jumping in and buying right away, you could be spending way more than what the market says they're worth. There is game theory involved in it.
Joel, this has been spectacular. If people want to discover more about the Sly Guy project, and by the time we obviously release this show, it will have already been minted and on OpenSea secondary market. If they want to discover where they can find out that and where they can discover more about you, where would you recommend sending them?
They can go to planetsly.com to get whitelisted for the collection right here and to find out more about it, get into the Discord and find about the roadmap and the benefits that it brings. And of course, you can find me on socials at JoelCom. I'm pretty much everywhere that you would find at JoelCom. That's me.
Awesome. Joel, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all your awesome wisdom and insights. I know that we're a lot smarter because of it. Catch you next time, my friend.
Adios, muchacho.
Hey, if you missed anything, we took all the notes for you over at socialmediaexaminer.com/C17. If you're new to this show, be sure to follow us and let your friends know about this show. I'm at Stelzner on Instagram. This brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Crypto Business Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you next week. I hope you make the best out of your day, and may Web 3.0 continue to change your world.
The Crypto Business Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
Hey, just a quick reminder, join the Social Media Marketing Society today and level up your marketing for your company or your clients. Visit smmarketingsociety.com to find out more. The information provided in the Crypto Business Podcast is provided solely for educational purposes. Do not treat what you hear as investment, trading, or financial advice. Do your own research.